Yeah, there you go. That's John Sheehan with Last Night in a Dream, which is what some say, that this is all a dream. It's all a big illusion. Dr. Dean, Bob Neverett here with me, Delia Quigley, on Building Organic Bodies. And a dream, the illusion of what of reality. What do you all have to say about that?
Okay, let me, before Carolyn goes on, that's where everything flips. I mean, when we have this new digital world, all the platitudes, all the rituals flip in their purposes and intentions, so that now people welcome illusion and dream. It gives them a semblance of the old reality of the chemical body. That's what's different. And so people don't have a release, or they don't have a release into public space. Like the shamanistic rituals adjusted a person or the group to itself. All right, that was the ancient purpose of it. People, kids take the drugs and that for to enhance their ability to fantasize and retrieve their imagination or a sense of having an imagination, but it can't be translated into the public space, which is a black hole space of the chip body. And that's why the idea of the socially redeeming qualities of any drug or ritual or fad leads to suicide in that, because in the end, when you drop off and they're not doing that, and you have to relate to reality, that's where your sense of imbalance comes in. And then you feel really disconnected. So we should be happy the kids have access to heroin and drugs and all this stuff, because it keeps them going. If they didn't, they would kill themselves sooner.
Well, that's hardly a solution there, Mr. Neverett.
Oh, well, wait a minute. It's a solution. It's a way of pointing out what the situation is and then responding to that.
Right.
I'm defining what the question is properly.
All right. But the thing is, in their reaction, you know, that seeking within, that you have to, you know, bring them into another way. I mean, they are looking. They are looking for connection, and they're looking for something they know is there, which is what we always know, that there's another part of ourselves that we're not awakened to. And so it's drugs is considered a quick fix to get there, and it doesn't get you there. It mimics
yoga too.
It.
See, what's good to have you in this conversation is that you teach yoga as a potential solution, and you are awake enough to realize the problem you have of translating yoga into these people's lives that previous cultures and yoga teachers didn't have.
They didn't have that. They did that, but it's a whole different set of rules. And also, meditation, as we talked about last week, and yoga, is about allowing people just to make a connection to themselves and be in the world rather than remove themselves from the world, right?
Right. And the image they have of themselves is different now, what we're made up of. When one says, I'm going to connect with myself, what's the image I have of myself that I'm trying to connect with? That image now has to incorporate the TV body and the chip body.
Well, exactly. Yes, go on.
It's as if we have to remind people that they have to be extremely conscious of all their bodies, and if they want to live as long as they should be able to live, which is about 120 years, they really have to pay more attention to their chemical bodies, because it is being affected by so much in the environment and so much distraction by the chip body and the internet body away from their chemical body. So that's why I always come back to the chemical body solutions of eating properly and exercising and doing all the lifestyle things that people need to remind them that they're just getting so distracted by their other bodies.
That's right. The problem is they can easily lose. If people never had the health input or impulse before, it's even weaker now. Because they have other bodies that will make them forget that they have a chemical body.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you, as a doctor, see over the last 30 years, the incredible pollution of the chemical body, because people forget that it's a real entity or a major entity because they're satisfying their other stomachs.
Mm-hmm. And it's, I mean, just to get back to the so-called conspiracy, it really is a conspiracy with the food producers, the processed food producers and drug companies to sell their goods to the chemical body via the chip and TV body, because the content of the TV body and the chip body is so much advertising and so much junk that we begin to assume that we're as synthetic as these processed foods that we are buying, and that we can consume them and not suffer the consequences.
Well, you know, I'd like to hold on. I'd like to bring up that a comment you made at the end of our show last week, Bob, that I want to play in here, and that was when you were asking me about, you know, the work I was doing, and that, you know, I'm reaching, you know, a few people at a time, and, you know, that I don't know. It was an interesting conversation, and as a matter of fact, I went away feeling slightly offended by that conversation. You know, as if downplaying, you know, what I was doing. And I thought about it to some extent. And what I realized in that, and what has motivated me to take this track, is how moving an individual to a point of this awareness and this awakening takes so much time and effort and focus, you know, and concentration on both our parts, that it's not something you can do en masse, you know. And
yeah.
And we had talked about those, you know, the big churches now, the big mega churches, that
the mall churches,
you know, that people come in and they're getting this kind of new agey Christian, you know, your day was rough because whatever, and, you know, pray to God about it, and you know, and people are still unsatisfied. They're still unsatisfied because they're still disconnected. They're disconnected from their chemical body totally. They're disconnected from God or whatever the mystery is, right? And so in teaching people, small groups of people, one-on-one, one, two, you know, you see people come and go, and then you see people who get it or know that there's something there, right? And it takes time, and you have to nurture that. You just can't do that to huge groups of people. It's really an individual path that you have to nurture. It's a really interesting phenomenon and experience as a teacher, right? So I just wanted to bring that up because I thought it was, you know, I'm glad I had the experience, the way I felt about it, and then my looking at it, and as I went through the week in working with my students, you know, what was coming up, and as a teacher too, working to lose your students so that,
yeah,
you know, they have that strength then to not need you as a teacher, that they can continue their practice of internalizing on their own self-practice.
Did you say you wanted to play a segment?
I wanted to, I wanted to read this piece that I came upon, interestingly. I just picked up the book and opened it when I was at the library, and it's a book by George Carlin. I thought I'd just throw in a little funny take on this. And it is called Napalm and Silly Putty. And it's his take on the Earth, the planet. And I thought I'd just share it. We got a moment here. He says, environmentalists don't give a shit about the planet anyway. Not really. Not in the abstract. You know what they're interested in? A clean place to live. Their own habitat, that's all. They're worried that sometime in the future they might personally be inconvenienced. Narrow, unenlightened self-interest doesn't impress me. And by the way, there's nothing wrong with the planet in the first place. The planet is fine. The people are fucked. Compared with the planet, compared with the people, the planet is doing great. It's been here over 4 billion years. Did you ever think about that? The planet has been here 4.5 billion years. And we've been here for what? 100,000? And we've only been engaged in heavy industry for a little over 200 years. 200 versus 4.5 billion. And we have the nerve, the conceit, to think that somehow we're a threat. That somehow we're going to put this beautiful little blue-green ball in jeopardy. Believe me, this planet has put up with much worse than us. It's been through earthquakes, volcanoes, plate tectonics, solar flares, sunspots, magnetic storms, pole reversals, etc., etc., ice ages, hundreds of thousands of years of bombardment by comets, asteroids, and meteors. And people think a few plastic bags and aluminum cans are going to make a difference. The planet isn't going anywhere, folks. We are. We're going away. Pack your shit. We're going away. And we won't leave much of a trace. Thank God for that. Nothing left. Maybe a little styrofoam. The planet will be here and we'll be gone. Another failed mutation. Another closed and biological mistake. The planet will shake us off like a bad case of fleas. And it will heal itself because that's what the planet does. It's a self-correcting system. The air and water and earth will recover and be renewed, and if plastic is really not degradable, well, most likely the planet will incorporate it into a new paradigm, the Earth plus plastic. Earth doesn't share our prejudice against plastic. Plastic came out of the Earth. She probably sees it as one of her children. In fact, it could be the reason the Earth allowed us to be spawned in the first place. It wanted plastic and didn't know how to make it. It needed us. That could be the answer to our age-old question. Why are we here? Plastic, assholes. So now, there's a different take on it, eh?
Well, yeah. No, I think it's a conventional take. What, imagine writing that 100 years ago. The guy is accepting the extinction. Maybe Nietzsche was the beginning of that nihilistic view. But the reason George can have that cavalier attitude is he's talking about the chemical body. And that he says, we're gone, we're going, it's already gone. What he doesn't know is that we're being translated into silicon and we'll be preserved inside the computer vestibules, and maybe the planet will accept that. But the image he has of what is going to be disappeared has already gone. So he's cynical about the chemical body disappearing because he lives in the TV body. He makes his living out of it. So I think that his attitude is I can get that on news groups, that attitude. Everybody has that attitude. Everybody says, yeah, what the hell, let's go.
Exactly, exactly, and that's why I bring it up, because it's a constantly coming upon that attitude.
Yeah, and yet that attitude would not have been around 100 years ago. You might have had one obscure, you know, extreme artist or some, the Hindus talk in terms of thousands of years, right? They say this is the age of Kali. Are they indifferent to the pollution and all that's happening now? Are they not worried because it's just a phase, a 300,000-year phase or whatever?
No, not necessarily. You know, that they're not concerned about it because it's really, you know, continuing to deal with the chemical body, so the chemical body has to survive. And what, you know, everybody's saying is we're not going to survive. I mean, that's
right, but
that's pretty much the consensus. We're not going to survive.
Right. And the point is that's a consensus. So that means there's something else going on.
Okay, but you have to understand. Wait. The consensus is amongst a culture that does not believe in reincarnation.
Right. Yeah. The chemical body culture, and the chemical body is running around, the chemical brain is saying, yeah, we ain't going to survive. But there is an indifference to it, an acceptance of it, because it already has been wiped out by the TV body and the chip body. And that's why we can be cavalier about an old environment. It's not really what we're made up of. It's only one quarter of us. And so that's where the root of that attitude, that nihilistic attitude, comes from. And the what if we don't extinguish ourselves? What if we're still here 100 years from now, and we actually have a better world? Are you going to be able to handle that if you've got a cynical attitude?
Well, first of all, it won't be here in 100 years, not in that form anyway. But, you know, the idea of reincarnation and karma and the everything continuing to move forward in this evolution is all very viable in terms of, you know, what you're saying with the yogi world.
Yeah, right? Now, the Kali cycle is followed by a better cycle, and they are imaging it in terms of the chemical body has a better environment, right, after the Kali phase.
Right, but, you know, you can also connect that to the biblical predictions. You can connect that to Nostradamus' predictions. You can connect that to the astrological predictions that we're going through the dark ages, and then, which are supposed to get even worse, and then there'll be peace. I mean, there'll be this beautiful time. I mean, it's just not, you know, one culture saying that. Are you aware of that as well?
Yes. Okay. You want to say something, Carol?
I don't know. I keep thinking about the chemical body, that, you know, all this talk is very nice and very interesting, but, you know, they're putting out these out these stories about people still want their painkillers, people still want their drugs, people still are getting all their information through a chip and a TV source that's bought and paid for by big business and big pharma. And as long as that happens, then they're going to be taking drugs and things that are affecting their chemical body, and they have no clue about the other options and choices, which is what Delia and I talk a lot about in our body rejuvenation cleanse and, you know, all the books we write.
Yeah, now that gives me an idea. When you say you're concerned about the chemical body,
mm-hmm.
you're actually concerned about First Nature, which is a mystery. We don't know the full constituents, that part of ourselves that was made by First Nature. We don't know fully what it is. So I call that the ongoing mystery body that we're exploring. You want to bring in what I call astral body energies or non-Western chemical body imagery from other cultures or from new discoveries of studies of supplements that, to incorporate a broader image of the chemical body. And therefore, you're actually concerned about the First Nature body, not the chemical body. You see that we're hypnotized by the chemical body imagery, which came in with the industrial age. And we look at the body still with that imagery, the chemical body. You know what I'm saying?
So I guess I really don't see the separation between our chemical physical body and First Nature.
Okay.
To me, the chemical body is, you know, it depends on First Nature. It depends on real live food to eat, et cetera, et cetera. Up at this conference that I spoke at, I was the moderator for a panel between the raw food, the new fad, the raw food people, all these young folks who, you know, all of a sudden they've decided that raw food is the way to go, and Sally Fallon, who Delia's interviewed many times in her radio show, who believes in the old traditional diet of meat and raw milk, raw dairy, and the fact that you need butter and fat and animal products in order to build your nervous system. So these young kids, you know, in the flush of youth, yeah, you know, they can eat raw food, but try that for 30, 40 years and see if their bodies can tolerate it. So
is Sally Fallon for the raw food movement?
No.
Oh, why?
Because it's avoiding animal products, animal food. The raw food people are strict vegetarians. And in her research for the Price Pottinger Foundation, she's researched, and people before her, Price and Pottinger, surveyed every culture in the world and found that all cultures that survived were animal eaters.
Right, and that was when there was pure animals.
That's
now,
right,
yeah.
Exactly.
The problem is that these kids are reacting to the pollution of the chemical body.
That's right.
So they don't want to eat. How does Sally react to that?
Well, she, you know, they kind of have that understanding that it's sort of the polluted food, but it came down to being a spiritual issue that these raw food people believe that you shouldn't kill animals, and that by you're wasting farming land on feeding one cow when a farm could feed, you know, however many dozens of people that one cow uses up. So it's the balance that they're looking at there. To feed the whole world, they think it has to be vegetarian.
Right. Well, I'm saying that we don't know what we're made up of. The Western world has a hegemony on the imagery we have of ourselves. That imagery I call the chemical body, built up with microscopes and modern industrial technology, right? And science. The other cultures had other constituents in the body, and I say they're distinguished from the chemical body by the fact they bring in astral energies, like Chinese medicine. They bring in meridians and things that that Western technology can't measure. So you like to bring in that stuff, and so you bring in the astral and chemical body, but both of them are attempts to figure out what we are. And what we are is first nature, but we don't know the full constituents. So when you say you're concerned about the chemical body, you're concerned about how to improve the imagery that what is known as a chemical body, improve the imagery of that chemical body to understand it has other imagery and other constituents that need to be fed. And so to put them two together, that's the first nature body. You're asking people to not assume they're limited by the chemical body imagery.
Yeah, but you know, I think what it really comes back down to you is that people are just hypnotized. I mean, all the media, the pharmaceutical corporations, the advertising, everything is all geared towards hypnotizing people and controlling them through that keeping them in a hypnotic state.
And well, every culture hypnotizes their citizens because experience is hypnotizing. You know, how can I stop looking at the trees, the sun, the streets, and what's around me? The senses immediately condition you.
No, we're talking about mass propaganda to sell people stuff that makes a lot of money for a few people and makes the rest of us who take that stuff sick.
Right, that's a disservice.
Yeah,
that's
major.
That's a disservice of the old chemical body structure, which hogs the sense of content and ignores the effects of the TV body and the chip body.
So, you know, what are the solutions? When you say how much media, turn off the damn television. Get rid of it. All right?
Well, yeah. What if I have a job in those industries?
Well, let me just remark on the media ecology. I was talking to a friend here in the community the other day, and she said next week is turn off your TV week in school. And she said it used to be that the whole school did it, but apparently just grade 3 is doing it this year. And she said the teacher sends home a sheet of 101 things you can do without the television, and one of them is turn off your television or cancel cable. And she was joking and saying, I hope the cable company doesn't see that. They'd get mad.
Yeah, you see, I don't think turning off media is an appropriate strategy to understanding what the deal is. First of all, you got to realize it's part of your body, so it's like asking to chop your arm off. The only practical way the chemical body can affect the propagandist is not by things.
Well, I think it is turning off TV. I mean, I don't know how much TV you watch, but I don't watch much.
Yes, but you watch movies. And on your chip body, you bring
well,
in
they
DVDs.
Don't, well, they have their advertising content embedded, but I'm not inundated with commercials. I haven't watched commercials since, you know, I watched a few minutes of the Pope show.
You don't need to watch the commercials. Commercials are for other media. Now, that brings up the third thing I did yesterday. I forgot to tell you. I went, and as a result of this conference, has anybody of you two heard of Reverend Billy and the Church of Stop Shopping?
No.
Have you heard of Reverend Billy, Delia?
No.
He's sort of a performance artist here in New York City, and he gets around the country. So he put on a seminar, a workshop, and I dropped in on it because I've seen him around before. I've heard him on WBAI. And so he told people why, I think it was his wife was working with him, why Starbucks is the most evil company on the planet today. And he went through the details, and then he said, we're now going to make a demonstration. We're going to put this into action. So we all walked down to 14th and 6th Avenue and went into Starbucks. Now, here's what he wanted people to do. Everybody, there was about 30 people. So they went into the store, small store, you know, slowly, so it didn't attract too much attention. And they would find an object, a chair, a styrofoam cup, a salt dispenser, a napkin. And when his wife wiggled her hair, took the beret off, and she'd be in a position where everybody could see her, they were to do this. Everybody was to lift their object, chair, whatever, and raise it to the sky and make a prayer to it and say, the worker that made this chair, the worker that made the napkin, the worker that made this little dispenser, we have sympathy for you, and that we recognize that you are not understood, that you suffer, and you would, I'm not going to go into the details, I can't remember it all, but you had to make a prayer out loud, a group prayer, saying you acknowledge there is no different distance between the chair or the napkin and the people that made it. So it was a way of expressing solidarity with the workers around the world who work anonymously for these consuming environments that people have. So the wife made the signal. Everybody started doing it, and Reverend Billy then came in, and he lifted up a chair, and he led it because he was the best at saying the prayer. So everybody did this prayer, and the workers and the customers just stand there stunned at this performance going on. And then they finished their prayer, went on for about 5 minutes, and then everybody walked out, and then Reverend Billy went outside, and well, he made one more speech appealing to the people who were not part of it to understand what was going on. Then he went outside, and then he held another, continued the demonstration on the street corner. So this is the Reverend Billy of the Church of Stop Shopping. He's trying to get people. He did end his speech in Starbucks telling people not to buy the Starbucks. So there was an action of an attempt at media ecology. Now, I agree that, you know, people should realize. He was asking people to realize the environments that they are consuming in have connections to workers and slaveries all over the planet. So he's making people aware of what was involved in getting the coffee to them, the coffee beans, and what was going on in those plantations. So there is an example of a movement. But when we get outside, I was watching people's reaction. Like, I didn't do this. I just stood there and observed. You know, I didn't do a prayer, didn't pick up anything. And I watched the workers, and they were kind of snickering and puzzled by this. But we went outside, and he went on ranting about it, and they did a hallelujah prayer and celebrated what they'd just done. This old guy walks by, and he goes, "Damn idiots, what a bunch of idiots." Walks on down the sidewalk, and other people were looking and saying, "What idiots!" Other people walking by didn't even know what was going on, and so it was total chaos, but there was this puny little action, and that's what happened.
And on that...
And on his website, you can donate to the cause.
Reverend Billy's website.
Yep.
Here we go. We're going to take a music break here. Stay with us, and email us at live@buildingorganicbodies.com. I'm Delia Quigley. Bob Neverett, Dr. Carolyn Dean, we'll be right back.
I'm tired of doing things I don't believe. Had three wishes, I'd use them all for wings. Been saving silver in a jar on the floor. Guess it's doing no more good than holding close the door. $20 in the tank and rubber on the ground. Time to move it on out of this town. For every time I let you down, I'd buy this city up just so I could tear it down. So I shoulder up my overnight, step quickly and short. The plan is simple, I admit, but pure. I'll take a trip to anywhere aboard the next outbound. Anywhere at all out of this town. This town. out of this town. Out of this town.
Doug Allen Wilcox, Out of This Town. And that's off the Winona Folk Acoustic Music Concerts, the artist from our freshman year. That's the CD. Hey, you're listening to Building Organic Bodies here on homegrownradionj.com. And I'm on the air here with Dr. Carolyn Dean and Bob Neverett. And we've been offering solutions, of which, what did you just summarize all our solutions, Bob?
Selenium, silence, and sanity. Carolyn offers vitamin E kinds of stuff like selenium. She says selenium's for cancer. You offer silence, which is going into yourself through yoga. And I offer sanity in the sense of a proper statement of the question and problems we're involved in.
No, in the sense of making people think you're insane so that they think they're sane.
That's right. I offer a standard of insanity that reinforces their sense of sanity.
There you go, people.
Okay, so I've been thinking about this perplexing piece of information that came up a couple of weeks ago about the electromagnetic energy, right? And that we're out of balance with the Earth's energy. And as a matter of fact, that the Earth's electromagnetic field has declined considerably in the last 3,000 years, I think it is. But it's really gone down a lot. And so when I was thinking about why that would have, why that occurs, I remember thought I had during and still, but I don't know if it still is rampant, but during the crystal phase, when everybody was buying crystals and putting crystals on their bodies and using crystals, and I couldn't help but thinking, that crystals, as powerful as they are part of the Earth's energy and magnetism, right? And then I, start thinking about this whole idea of lack of electromagnetism, how much of the Earth mineral resources and natural resources we're stripping out of her, not just off the top of her, but out of her core, right? So I was just reading this article about uranium to make nuclear weapons. What's this amazing substance that they pull out of the Earth's core to make these nuclear weapons, right? What else do we take out of it? We take out all the minerals. We take out gold, and we take out silver, and we take out uranium and ore and oil. I mean, we're depleting the Earth of her oil. Now, how do we know she doesn't need that to fuel her fire? You know what I'm saying? That we're
we're turning into plastic, which Earth may need.
Okay, there it is. So she's going to be wrapped in saran wrap.
Yeah. The old joke that the chicken was the egg's means for getting more eggs. So humans are the Earth's way to get plastic, which would be a new form of itself.
Okay, that's one way of saying it. But I'm coming back to just that idea of, we don't know, right? I mean, it's like, how many chemicals do we have in the environment today? The thousands and thousands of chemicals. No one can say, that one's the one that caused cancer, right? I mean, this is
about 50,000 in common use.
50,000 chemicals in common use. That's amazing. And why are we? Why are people shocked that one in two people or one in three people are getting cancer?
Mm-hmm. Put it together, but in terms of the electromagnetic field declining over the past 3,000 years, maybe it's just like the ozone that some people are saying it's the cycling of the Earth. Maybe 100 million years ago it declined, or 100,000 years ago, and by us being able to measure it over the last few thousand years doesn't mean a thing in terms of the long history of the Earth.
This is true, but at the same time, as we watch it decline more and more, you know, we have to look at what we're extracting from her. I mean, we're taking what we extract from the earth is our minerals and resources that are so intense that how can they not be part of her ability to function? She's a living organism, the earth.
Right, right. I know it's. I'm very much with you on that in terms of how the chemicals make their way into the water supply and are affecting all sorts of living organisms, causing infertility and all kinds of strange mutations in all life forms. But it's interesting. Someone was talking to me about sea vegetables and how important they are, and I was reminded of how when the rains come down on the earth, they sort of drive the minerals into the sea, which is what makes sea vegetables so powerful. But they also are taking chemicals that are saturating the agricultural farms and taking those chemicals, which are measured in any amount of water all over the planet. You can find levels of drugs that we take in one end and goes out the other into the sewage system. So we've got both bounty and this decimation of our water supply and of our health.
Yeah, I like to say affluence and effluence.
Yeah, very good.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But it seems that the imaging, a solution is to realize, is to update your imaging, and this is the yoga I advocate. I mean, when you teach yoga, you provide certain images of the chakras and how to swim in them and modulate them. I offer new images in this sense that you can't imagine that you are in the United States or New York City or New Jersey or Toronto or someplace. You are in a soup that can't be measured in the old maps terms. And if let's say North America becomes so polluted that people have to leave it, well, there'll be other parts, maybe China or maybe Norway or Australia, that what we call Australia, that landmass, there'll be parts there that will be protected and kept pure, and people will migrate and be crammed in there. McLuhan used to say you could put the whole population of the world into Canada if you designed the cities properly. And so we need to realize that you're not walking where you think you're walking. And when you bring in the TV and chip body, those are other factors. The solution is to realize that you are pretty well going to be dead in 15 minutes if you're not already dead. And if you're still walking around, you should steal very softly through this snow and be very sensitive, like you've just become born, like Paleolithic humans. It's like 200,000 B.C., and you need to be very sensitive and look at the environment afresh and don't assume you're where media tell you are. I mean, you can't judge any city's reports on the water supply, so you're always... You have to remember the Firesign Theater statement, everything you know is wrong. That's a beginning point. And then you might be a little more humble, and you might be a little more interested in the world because you'd be more amazed that you're still here when you wake up the next day. And that if this pollution is happening all over the place, how do we know that some places aren't, some governments or some corporate secret networks aren't making secure places that are pure? So where are they? How do you get into those environments? I'm saying that the boundaries are very hard to determine because they're changing every day.
You should become a Republican.
Yes, when I'm around Republicans, I'd be a Republican. You know, there's no point arguing with them because they're arguing over issues that are really silly and irrelevant compared to what we're talking about. Because you got global scientists, didn't they announce last fall that, like, 300 Nobel Prize guys says, "Hey, we're in trouble. We don't do something in the next 15 minutes, we're gone."
Yes.
You know, I'm exaggerating the
No, they did.
What?
They did.
They did make this report, but who's implementing it? Probably not what's called governments are implementing it, but somebody may be in making a secure environment. So you better be aware that you aren't living where you think you are, and you better be open to anybody who's around you and listen to them, because they might be the bodyguard or the security key to some place where you can live if you want to be here in 50 years. So the that's why the TV offers panic imagery. It's just throwing things at people to see what sticks. They say, you're going to die this, you're going to get that, all this panic. And the best thing is assume, well, I don't need to listen to that, I'm already dead. The chemical body's already dead. And if I'm still here, then where am I? So you begin to explore with a sense of not assuming that the images you have of where you are apply.
Okay, I'm exhausted.
Why?
Okay, I guess I better take over here.
Yeah, you take over. Replenish us.
My brain's spinning.
People need to know more about taking care of their physical body. Oh, here's a story for you.
Okay.
Up in Canada at Total Health, I had a great chance to complete a cycle. I was on a panel about Codex, and a well-known media personality, Deanie Petty.
Who's the Oprah of Canada.
The Oprah of Canada, years ago on TV, and now she has a radio show. And she was the moderator of this panel. And at one point, someone in the audience asked, well, you know, why don't the TV radio stations talk about Codex? How come we're not hearing about it? And everybody on the panel just burst out laughing, like, yeah, they're not going to be promoting information that's going to be detracting to big business and big pharma. So after we laughed, then Deanie Petty, who is the media, had to respond to that. And she said, well, I have to tell you that I've been in the media this and that, you know, however many decades, and people sort of gave a little cheer. And he said, no, I'm not saying it that way. I just want you to know that I've never stopped a story or been told to stop a story or, you know, and she went on and on. And I sort of kind of indicated that I wanted to answer her before she just, you know, kept going on. And I said, well, let me tell you a story, Deanie. On your show in 1990...
No, December 89.
Oh, December 89.
Yeah.
I was asked to come on, and it was in the Christmas season, and talk about sugar. And we had a great show. I did a demo on showing the 10 teaspoons of sugar in a can of pop and 27 teaspoons in a milkshake, and everyone had a great time. And I said about 3 weeks later, a sugar lobby group complained to my College of Physicians and Surgeons that I had said bad things about sugar and therefore I was a bad doctor. And I said the college upheld that statement and accused me of making misleading statements about sugar, even though on the show I was talking about a book I had mostly finished writing and all the research I'd done. And so they upheld that complaint and admonished me for saying bad things about sugar. And then that led to my being investigated and then them sending a plant into my office and on and on and on. And I just explained the whole attack on me for the sugar story and also for being a doctor who didn't do the drugs and surgery routine on patients. So I think she made a comment then because she said, well, you know, something about you should have called me or something about we would have put that on the show. And I said, oh, as a matter of fact, I did call your producer and I never heard back from anyone because I said the media wasn't there to report the story that, you know, of me being attacked, but it was certainly quite happy to have me on as content to fill up the TV time. And this is a, you know, one of my circles that has been completed because, as I said, I was never able to get back to that person or she to me to find out, well, what do they do when someone is being attacked by an establishment sugar group? Who are they going to support?
And it came full circle. Well, you were able to embarrass Deanie, and
well,
and
I didn't. I mean, I didn't want to embarrass her. I just wanted to let her know the truth of what had happened.
But she ended up embarrassing herself because she said, "Well, you could have called me," and you said, "I did, but we couldn't get to you."
Right.
You never got back to me. So, I mean, what did the audience do when you said that?
They clapped and cheered.
Cheered you?
Yeah.
And what did she look like? Did you look at her?
Yeah, she looked pretty kind of embarrassed and crestfallen, and we just went on.
He ignored it. Didn't want to embarrass her too long.
No.
But
no.
So you did it.
Well, yes, and, you know, I would have done it in person, but this is the way the media controls what is going on.
Yeah, like your chemical body was attacked by another chemical body institute, the Sugar Institute, and the TV body never knew it happened, could not find out, could not deal with it, and it caused it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the unreachability between the chemical body and the TV and chip body. There's a gap there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just read in the New York Observer a very detailed story in the March 14th issue about what happened to the guy who gave the forms, the documents about Bush's service in the National Guard in 1972 that led to Dan Rather quitting. And this guy is now complaining. His name was Burkett, Bill Burkett. He knew it was dangerous to deal with CBS, but at one point, as the story came out and then there was a lot of complaints and everything, Dan Rather had to meet with him to find out if the documents were real. And Dan Rather told him that we will not hang you out, we will not expose you, this is confidential, but tell me the stuff. So they had a meeting in a hotel down in Texas somewhere, and they had the interview, and then Dan Rather went back to the station, and they exposed Bill Burkett. They hung him out. And they then go through the whole ramifications. Bill Burkett is totally angry at Dan Rather, and all that happened. And Dan Rather's, and then the CBS people that are still there, even though Dan Rather's gone, say, no, no, we didn't do that. But what was interesting, the story ended with the producer, the vice producer of the segment, a woman named Betsy somebody, said, the journalist describes how she came into this little green room they made for the hotel for Burkett and his wife, and she was all happy that Dan Rather got what he wanted to get when they interviewed him, this guy Burkett down in Texas. But when this executive producer Betsy walked into the green room, there was Mr. and Mrs. Burkett on their knees praying, and Mrs. Burkett was crying and had said, other people said around there, that they knew they'd been suckered by Dan Rather. So they were praying. But Betsy looked at them and was totally in shock and was horrified at what that really was communicating. Here were two little chemical bodies who'd just been translated for the TV body and knew that they were going to get nailed and that Dan Rather ripped them off. And she probably was shocked, being a secular humanist kind of person, at this, you know, this primitive instinct of these people appealing to God to help them from being ripped off by the TV body that they knew was going to happen. So the journalist ends saying this was a very frightening scene for Betsy. And that's how the article ended. And just think of it. These people were praying after they had interacted with Dan Rather.
Trying to bring in the mystery body.
You want to hear the five compelling signs of the end times?
Okay.
Just got this on the email.
Who sent it to you?
Just came from prophecy, some sort of prophecy journal. Number one, Arafat's death causes upheaval in Middle East peace process. So the death of Yasser Arafat has important bearing on the peace process and restoration of Israel. Some believe that his removal from the process will make peace more achievable and potentially allow the prophecy of Israel to be fulfilled. Others fear that his demise will throw the region in chaos. So it's like, oh, it can, you know, go either way.
Right.
No, but the Christians want these bad things to happen because then it brings the second coming.
Mm.
You know, they want the temple to be built so it'll cause World War III and that'll bring Jesus. So,
so is that the only one?
That's number one.
Oh, actually, to join the Prophecy Club, I have to send them my email address, so I don't think I'll do that.
Okay, so I have one thing.
5 points?
No, to get the other four, I have to give them my email address.
Oh, okay.
I have to worship at the Church of Prophecy, so I'm not going to do that.
Okay, so I have one thing. We only got a few more minutes.
Let me finish the thing about Arafat. Just take a second. Is Arafat was created by Francois Janoux. Arafat was the nephew of the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, which was the Nazis' agent in the Middle East during World War II. So Arafat was brought up by the Nazi Xinhu network, which is interesting.
That's interesting, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so in the last 5 minutes, I'm going to bring this up. I was talking to a literary agent the other day working in books, and I said, so how is it in the book publishing industry now? Selling a lot of books? She said, no. It's very low and it's very down. What people are buying are computer games. So that's the that is the big seller. People aren't reading as much, as we know, and they're spending their money on games, computer games.
Wow.
And you'll be able to, with this video blogging, be able to make weird game stuff in your video blog. I saw a demonstration of some of this technology. You can draw on it. You can mix all kinds of graphic techniques into your video blog, you know, into your little video that you'll send out all over the place.
So then,
people are fully involved in the TV screen, not the industrial literate world anymore.
Right, which we've talked about.
Yeah.
Okay, so and it's going to go away from even further away from blogging, you know, on the internet to just video blogging. It's no writing is going to be obsolete.
Right. Now remember, I said at the beginning the ecology. This is part of the balanced media diet. Just as our senses are always in a form of harmony and an ecology, or else we wouldn't have coherent consciousness, our media dynamics are always in a hidden ecology. And the dynamic here is as we go more into the video blogging and less book reality, the balance provided by the television screen and the American culture will be to hoik up one book as the archetypal book. And that explains why religious fundamentalism has come in over the last 20 years. If you're going to not have regular reading, then you preserve the past and that visual eyeball culture by becoming a fundamentalist Christian and going to church every year and having these every week and having these malls celebrating the archetypal book for Western civilization, the Bible. So that is why you're going to get more and more fundamentalism, and that's why the Republican Party got hip to that 20 years ago and knows that if you want to have a literate institution in Washington, which represents literate values, it must be born-again Christian. So more and more fundamentalism is going to come due to the video blogging. You get my point?
Yes.
That's the ecology. You hook up one thing, it's balanced off by another sense or an extension of the sense, which is what the book is.
So we should video blog ourselves here for the show.
What's the point of doing video blogging? I learned how to do it there, and I said, what's the point? I'm going to send out a bunch of... Most of the video blogging by the younger people, there was this one kid in Britain who vowed that he'd do a video blog every day, 365 days. So he comes on, and he stares up at the camera with this like demon-like look, and he goes, I had a real nice day today. See you tomorrow. Next day. Yep, today was nice. And that's all his video blog was. So he's doing it with a sense of irony. This video blogging is people are going to use it, but it's obsolete. What's the point? How do you translate it? You're just going to show some footage. They had this couple that went shopping, so they showed themselves shopping. What the heck does it matter?
Well, you know, people, they want to be totally distracted from their lives that are going nowhere.
Yes,
that they're hypnotized lives.
And my esoteric source told me that we're going to realize over the next few years that being distracted is the life force, the nutrition of human existence. Culture is based on distraction, and we should begin to look at distraction as a very vital force, a very vital nutrient.
But that is the ego mind, the small self.
That's not
the real self. That's not the real self. That's the self that, you know, takes you away. It wants to survive. The ego self wants to survive, and it's not going to survive in the way it has survived, in the controlling way, if one comes to realize that that's not who you really are. You're not that. And that's what companies don't want you to know. That's what, you know, the ego mind doesn't even want you to know. It's that self within you that is creating the illusion and keeping you...
That's the mystery self.
It's keeping you away from the mystery self.
Keeping you away from the mystery self.
Right, because to find the mystery self would be to destroy the ego self. And it won't be destroyed.
If we have these four bodies and we get used to them, we need to offer the solution, which is the mystery body. Explore the mystery body, and it requires silence.
It requires silence.
So if you can put some charm and charisma into exploring the mystery body.
Okay, I'll work on a video blog for that.
And, yes, explore the mystery body.
I'll get to, the mystery body blog. And
yes.
With that...
because that's what you're saying. You're saying that the mystery body is an immeasurable, amazing landscape to explore.
Unnameable.
It's a thrilling landscape that is richer than anything you get from the other bodies.
There you go. Yeah, you gotta.
Isn't
that what
you're
saying? That's right. We gotta make an advertisement for it. You know, like a 10-second spot about the mystery body.
Well, the Pope does that. The Pope offered his version of the mystery body, right? He represented the mystery body.
Yeah,
part of the reason. What?
Yes, he did, but only in a conventional sense. I mean,
yeah,
to me, it wasn't my idea of the mystery body. But then there you go.
His imagery was old.
Was old.
Yeah.
Right.
So what is the new imagery for the mystery body? I think that the dialogue between the three of us and our sort of, quote, specialties, selenium, silence, and sanity, the interplay of our three archetypal attitudes points to something beyond each one of what we're saying. And we are an ad for the mystery self, because if anybody listens to us, we should depress them really seriously. We should be, as part of our fact, we should also be offering some kind of escape route, though it's very hard to image it. But the interplay of the three is a way of pointing to the mystery body, right?
Right. Exactly.
We're trying to get people not to be distracted, right?
Right. Okay, and silence
is that
needed.
What we're trying to do?
Yes.
Well, we're trying to get them, I'm trying to get them to emphasize their chemical bodies before they lose it, or else they won't be able to have any interaction with any of their bodies.
And I'm trying to get them to activate the astral. Now, listen, we have 1 minute, so we have to complete here. Okay? So, but we can pick this up next week. Stay tuned.
Yeah, but the thing is, Carolyn, you haven't learned. You're not emphasizing the chemical body. You are here to say there's something that you're ignoring, and the chemical body is the imagery that you know it as, and that chemical body imagery is duping you, because you think you're made of, the consumers think they're made of drugs, and they think drugs will solve it.
So I'm trying to say they're not made of drugs. You're made of organic living molecules, and you have to get back to eating and drinking and breathing those, or you'll lose your chemical body and lose all your various bodies, because you depend on your chemical body in this physical life form.
Okay, and with that, I'm cutting you two off from your feeding tube.
Yay!
You're welcome.
So good night, and we'll be back next week with Building Organic Bodies. Please email us live@buildingorganicbodies.com. Let us hear from you. Thanks again for listening in. I'm Delia Quigley, Bob Neverett, Carolyn Dean, and Selenium, Silence, and Sanity. That'll be that we should change the name of the show. All right. Bye-bye.
Homegrown.